It's good to see everyone this morning. I just want to start by saying I appreciate your prayers for this coming week. I'll be traveling for some prayer retreat time this week and be going away for just a few days to reconnect with God, spend some time in silence, spend some time by myself listening and resting, reading the Word, and being able to spend some time reading and just having some time for reflection and restoration. I do this every year, usually at the beginning of a calendar year or in November before Advent hits strong, so it's that time, just to show you how good of a planner I am. Last year, I did this, and in 2020, I did this, and I didn't get it right on the dates that I wanted, so I planned it instead for the perfect time, right before spring break, March 9th through the 13th. Of 2020 was the perfect week to go, and as I got there, I immediately began receiving emails and calls from folks at church wondering what was going to happen with COVID, and that very next Sunday is the Sunday that we had to go to virtual-only worship and all of those kind of things. So the joke is that when I left the Outer Banks, I shut it down, so that's kind of how that worked out for last year. So I'm glad to be going to get some prayer retreat time and time to pray this week, and looking forward to that. Before that, though, it's Halloween, right? Halloween. How many of you are dressing up? Great, great. How many of you are sitting next to somebody who, or near somebody who's already dressed up? Already in their costume? Good. Okay, good. A couple of y'all, great. Great. What are you going to be? I've heard some great ideas. Anybody got anybody just shout something out, or if you're online, put it online. What are you going to be? I already heard from a couple of folks in our congregation today. We're going to have some skeletons. Heard from a couple of folks in Children's Sunday School this morning. We've got one family I know that one of the siblings is going to be a tooth, and the other sibling is going to be the tooth fairy. I thought that was pretty clever. All kinds of neat things going on. Halloween has gotten so much bigger in the last couple of decades. There are parties, there are costumes, there's more candy than you could ever imagine. It's grown way beyond trick-or-treating. It's gotten so much bigger, this holiday of candy, costumes, and things that are scary. I mean, everywhere you look on TV, there's things that are scary during the Halloween time, or if you're streaming things, there's things that are scary, and it's not just Halloween. You can find scary movies, Walking Dead, and Stranger Things all year long. This idea of the scary, this idea of Halloween is just coming all into the whole year. And I guess that's because we have this thing about fear, don't we? I want us to look, if you will, in Judges 7. And we're going to continue where we started last week with the Gideon story. In Judges 7, this is our last week we're talking about Gideon. We've done this, this is our third week talking about Gideon, and we're talking about today, we're really focusing on things that go bump in the night, things that make us afraid. So we're looking at verse 7 here, chapter 7. This is going to carry us to some of the stuff that we read last week. The Lord said to Gideon, "With the 300 men that lapped water, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the other men go, each to his own place." So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites to their tents, but kept the 300, who took over the provisions and the trumpets of the others. Now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley. During that night, the Lord said to Gideon, "Get up, go down against the camp, because I am giving it to your hands. If you are afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah, and listen to what they are saying. Afterwards, you will be encouraged to attack the camp." So he and Purah, his servant, went down to the outpost of the camp. Now, in case you don't remember, let's really think about how terrifying this moment was. Remember this Midianite army, which the text is going to tell us is like sand on the seashore. It covers the whole land like locusts. This Midianite army is 135,000 people, or so we're told in Judges chapter 8, verse 10. At least 135,000 people. Just so we kind of have an idea, all of you have heard of Yorktown and the Battle of Yorktown before, right? That happened somewhere near here, okay? George Washington was in command of 19,000 troops, give or take. both American and French troops. So with 19,000 troops, we won our independence. And the Midianites here have over 135,000 troops, which, by the way, the Israelites are going to go face them with 300 soldiers. Now, they used to have 32,000 soldiers. But as we talked about last week, God said to Gideon, you have too many troops to face those 135,000 Midianites. So God conveniently removes 31,700 troops and sends them home. So Gideon is now facing an army of 135,000 with 300 men. Now, on the very night that God has done the army shrinking routine, that very night, God says, it's time to attack. Can you imagine? These 300 men have just seen their army reduced to the size of a small battalion. They're facing a vastly superior force. And now God is saying it's time to attack, and they haven't even had any time to train. No time to communicate or coordinate. This is not a setup for success. It's a recipe for extermination. Who wouldn't be afraid when you're facing 450-1 odds? Now, the text doesn't exactly say they're scared out of their minds, but we know better. We know that whenever we face a challenge, a task, a disease, a decision, or an incident in our life that is way bigger than what we can handle, we know we get afraid. It's human nature. We don't necessarily get afraid of the boogeyman. We get afraid of reality. I have really two questions for you today, and then we'll close with one final one that kind of wraps them together. But the two questions are very important. And the first question is this: what are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? I'm not talking about the things that make you start. I'm not talking about the spiders. I'm not talking about those little things that may go bump in the night. Although I don't want to minimize phobias. Some people have really legitimate phobias of very serious things. And a lot of times those phobias can only be addressed with some help of your medical doctor or the counselor, those kind of things. But I'm really not talking about the little things that make a start or those phobias. I'm talking about the crisis that we cannot fix or the broken relationship that we don't know what to do with. Or anything in our lives right now that's a decision that we can't quite unravel. Or anything that seems bigger that just has us afraid. We're all afraid of the things that go bump in the night. Or maybe better put, the things that keep us awake at night. We're in a season that seems like fear is all around us. Now, just the stages of life bring fear to us. As we get older and our bodies don't work the way they used to, when we spend more time at the doctor's office and we know more medical terminology and more all those ads that show up on the TV or on Netflix or wherever about prescriptions, we know all those names by heart. All those kind of things make us afraid about our health and about our growing older. And then if it's not us growing older, it's our parents or our grandparents. What decisions are we going to have to make? What conversations are we going to have? And if it's not our parents, it's our children. Sometimes we get afraid for the things they face when they're toddlers. Sometimes we get afraid of what happens some in elementary school. And then we're afraid of the great A word, adolescence, and all the things that happen there and all the conversations. And then we're afraid when we send them off to drive for the first time by themselves. And that pit in the stomach only grows when we send them off to college or off to live on their own, wherever that may be. Life itself, the stages of life, give us enough reasons for fear and anxiety. But it's not even just that. It's the divisiveness of our nation. This fear that we will have some kind of disaster if we don't find a way to reconcile and be kind and actually care for one another. Especially now, Democrats are afraid of what happens if Republicans get elected. Republicans are afraid of what happens if Democrats get elected. And we're all afraid of what we might do to each other if we find just one more postcard in the mailbox, one more phone call coming to us, one more ad on the TV, or one more thing popping up in our social media about an election. Some teachers are afraid to walk into their school building each day. People are afraid for their marriages because they used to be in love, and now they may still love each other, but their relationship has turned more into a chaotic roommate existence than a love relationship. Some are afraid they're not going to have a job by the end of the year. Some are afraid they'll not be able to hold on financially. Fear is everywhere in our real lives. Maybe that's why we have all these zombie movies of the week, horror movies, Walking Dead, and Stranger Things, because it's easier to face our fictitious fears than our real ones. We know Gideon's men are afraid because we know in our own lives when things are bigger than we can handle, when things seem dangerous, when things seem uncertain, we get afraid too. The good news is God knows that we get afraid. God knows that every one of us wrestles at one time or another with fear, even if we put on that stout exterior that says we're not afraid of anything. As a matter of fact, in the Bible, there are 366 places where there is some variation of this phrase that appears. The Lord says, "Do not be afraid." God says that in 366 places. And you know who he says it to? People who are afraid. How we handle our fear determines whether we move forward with God or whether we get cowed by our circumstances. What are you afraid of? Now, our temptation is when we face that question. Our temptation is to say nothing or to just shrug it off, which leads us to our huge question, our second one. How do you face what you're afraid of? How do you face, when you really are courageous enough to own what you're afraid of, how do you face it? And this is where so many people get stuck in their lives. We get stuck right here, either not being willing to admit that we're afraid, or when we do admit that we're afraid, we handle it poorly. And we can handle it poorly in so many ways. One of the ways that we handle fear poorly is we pretend we're not afraid. We say, "No fear." We say, "I'm going to macho my way through this and not be afraid." We have a whole line of t-shirts, bumper stickers, other forms of clothing all around us that say, "No fear." And we put these on and we feel like that we can just handle anything, even if we have to hide from it. People invest so much energy in a no-fear machoism that it keeps them from actually facing their fear. The truth is, the no-fear of our culture is not the same as the do-not-be-afraid of God. Do not be afraid to people who are afraid. That's what God says. He's not telling us to live without fear. Rather, God is saying you need to know what to do when you need to know how you face your fear. And we face our fear with God. It's not whether or not you're going to be afraid. It's what you will do when you are afraid. One of my favorite verses of Scripture, I learned it when I was a child. And it helped me a lot when I was afraid. It still helps me a lot when I'm afraid. Psalm 56:3 says, "When I am afraid, I will trust in God." When I am afraid, I will trust in God. Notice it doesn't say, "If you are afraid." It says, "When I am afraid, I will trust in God." God is not telling us to live with no fear. He's telling us where to go with our fear. When I am afraid, I will trust in God. Some people pretend they have no fear. Other people handle their fear by being angry. They become angry when they're afraid. When people face something scary they cannot fix, they often will lash out in anger at anyone and everyone, anything and everything. If you've ever met someone who is always angry at their family, their boss, their church, their neighbors, the government, they're always angry, one of two things is going on. Either they're a really mean person, which, by the way, there are people who claim to love Jesus who are really mean people. Sadly, I've met many of those in churches. Or they're a person who's very afraid. They feel alone and they feel afraid. They may not even know that they're acting in anger out of their fear, but it still happens. There are so many people who act angry about everything when deep down they are afraid of something they may not have even identified. If you find yourself angry a lot, spend some time with God, asking Him to clarify your fears with you. Talk with a trusted friend. Talk with a counselor, please. Find out what's at root of that anger. Because, friends, it is so much better to face your fears than to vent your anger. Don't let your fear wound others. Now, some people, when they're afraid, they live in anger. Some people, when they're afraid, they live in worry. It works in much the same way as the anger. Their worry overwhelms them. Now, I'm not talking about medical anxiety issues that so many millions of Americans face. Those are things that you talk with your doctor, you talk with a counselor, and you work through those things. I'm talking about that worry that we allow to bubble up in ourselves and own us because of our circumstances. We all look at the things that are concerning to us, that make us afraid, and we are tempted to invest so much energy in worrying about things that we can't control. And that worry paralyzes us, doesn't it? It keeps us from acting. It keeps us from making forward progress. Do not let anger be something that you vent on someone else because you're afraid. Do not let worry paralyze you from relationship, from taking risk in your faith, or taking risk with your life. To lean into the dreams and vision that God has given you. Do not let worry rob you of that. Sometimes people deal with the fear of what they can't control by trying to exercise control over others and over other things. It works like this. Since I can't control the changes that are happening in my body, my mind, my country, my family, or whatever else, I will doggedly seek to exercise control over anything I can control. I will fight to make sure my family celebrates Thanksgiving the way I want them to. I will fight to make sure the people in my groups do the things the way I like. I will fight to make sure we do the vacations the way I want. I will fight to make sure Christmas is decorated in my home the way I want it to be. And I will make people feel guilty if I don't get my way. You see this happen in families, companies, countries, civic organizations. Believe it or not, you even see this happen in churches. I know. It's a shock. People feel threatened and afraid of changes that they can't control. So they tighten their grip on what they can control, or what they feel like they control, even if it is not theirs to control. That's how some other people react to fear. Some people respond to fear by cowering and hiding. We already know from the last couple of weeks that's Gideon's preferred way of dealing with fear. He runs and he hides. That's also many of our folks in our culture today. That's the way they face fear. Think about it in a financial sense. Have you ever known someone, or maybe ever been someone, who when the bills mount up and the financial calls keep coming from the creditors and it just becomes so stressful and so overwhelming that what you decide to do is, you know what, I'm going to take a trip. I got a new credit card, I'll charge it. I'm going to take a trip to get away from all this. And you get away from it. You know what's amazing about those trips? They feel great, but you know what happens? You always have to come back. And the bills are still there. The issues with the budget are still there. People will do things like this to run away from their financial issues rather than building a budget to live beneath their means, tightening their belt, and facing reality. And it's not just in financial issues, it's in our relationships. People will pretend their marriage is great and will pretend that everything is wonderful and will put that image out in front of everyone before they'll do the hard work of saying, honey, we need to go to counseling together to make things better. We need some help. We can hide from our fears in any arena of life. Those are just a couple of examples. Hiding from fear comes in all shapes and sizes. It's Gideon's preferred way of dealing with fear. And when you're facing 135,000 soldiers with only 300 men, I'm sure Gideon and all 300 were ready to flee deeper into the hills. But God intervenes. He offers hope. If you are afraid to attack, God says. I just kind of imagine God kind of smirking and chuckling when he said that line. If you are afraid to attack. Of course they're afraid to attack. In the midst of Gideon's fear, God gives words of encouragement. As a matter of fact, God gives a sign of his presence and power. God has done this a lot with Gideon. It's a key part of the Gideon story. There are two examples with the fleece that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. There's the example of God receiving the offering of Gideon. And then there's this example of him telling him to go and listen to the sentries, what they are talking about, and find courage to face your fear. You know, God does that for us too. Sometimes when we are afraid, when we are in dark moments, God sends just the voice we need to hear. An encouraging word from a friend, a passage of scripture that we needed at just the right moment, an unexpected empty space in your schedule where you get to take a second to breathe. Maybe even nap. A visit from an old or a new friend that lifts your spirit at just the right time. God gives us these gifts of encouragement and reassurance that even when we are afraid, we don't have to run. We can face our fear with a new vision from God. Chapter 7, verse 11 through 15, it tells us, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the eastern peoples had settled in the valley, thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than sand on the seashore. That's a lot of camels. Anybody going to be a camel for Halloween? Just wondering if you needed a last-minute idea. There you go. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. I have had a dream, the man was saying. A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed. His friend responded, "This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands." When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he worshiped God. It seems that the Midianite soldiers are afraid of things that go bump in the night. Did you ever know bread was so scary? That's your second costume idea for the evening, a round loaf of bread. Is there anything less frightening than a loaf of bread? And yet God takes this simple, unfrightening, not scary image of a round loaf of bread and uses it to illustrate God's power knocking down a tent, a secured, powerful tent of an incredible, larger-than-life enemy. How on earth would a loaf of bread defeat an army? It's not the only time that God uses bread as a symbol of deliverance over the power of evil. The bread takes down a heavy, secured tent. I don't think this is physically possible. If you're looking for something to do this afternoon, go and get a very secure and strong tent and pitch it in your backyard. And then get a round loaf of bread and roll it like a bowling ball at the tent, and then text me how many times it takes you to knock the tent down. I know y'all have a lot of spare time. This is not possible any more than it's possible for a group of 300 soldiers to overrun an army of 135,000 professional troops. And yet God promises Gideon it will happen. And Gideon even hears of this victory from the mouth of a Midianite soldier. And then it happens. Gideon, this hiding, afraid, newly minted leader of men, doesn't run off immediately to plan and strategize. He stops and worship. He doesn't stop and worship because they had won the victory. He worshiped because in God he had found faith to live beyond his fear. Yes, the victory over the Midianites came. You can finish reading about it in this chapter after you've seen how many times it takes you to knock down the tent with your loaf of bread. Gideon pulled off surprise, used some shrewd military moves of deception to make his force sound larger than it was. But Gideon didn't win this victory. God won this victory. In fact, it's not even the biggest victory that happens in the story. There's going to be other armies to fight, other national emergencies to address. The biggest victory in this story is that Gideon is changed from a man that cowers in fear to a man who walks forward in faith. Notice it doesn't say he stopped being afraid. It says he starts walking forward in his faith. He learned that when he was afraid, that God would go ahead of him and that God would even redeem the things that go bump in the night. God could deliver him through any army he faced, but even if God did not deliver him from difficult circumstances, and trust me, friends, there are plenty of times we go through the difficult circumstances, not around them. Even when God does not deliver us from difficult circumstances, what Gideon discovered is God walks with him through the difficult circumstances, just like we read about in the most well-known psalm of all, Psalm 23, where David says, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, the darkest place I can walk in my life, I will not be afraid because you are with me. The rod and staff of God, they comfort me." For the first time, Gideon realized that just because he was afraid didn't mean he had to live afraid. Gideon caught a new vision for what his life could be like if he faced his fear with God. Now, what about us? What about you? What about me? Two questions. What are you afraid of? And friends, as you think about that question this week, as you ponder and prayerfully consider it with God, let me encourage you, don't let other people tell you what you're supposed to be afraid of. Don't let the political pundits and whoever else in our world put their words into your mouth and make them your fears. Do the hard, soul-digging work of going deep within yourself and finding out where your fears really rest. And then answer the second question. How are you going to handle that fear? Those fears that you uncover, take them to God. Take them to God and say, God, don't make me not afraid. Make me willing to walk with you when I am afraid. God, teach me that I don't have to pretend to not be afraid in the face of difficult days, that I don't have to push my fear down so much in me and that it comes out in anger or that it comes out in worry, that I don't have to push my fear down within me and try and control everything outside of me, that I don't have to run away from my fear, but that I can face my fear and not be owned by it when I walk through life with you. Will you do what God asks you to do with your fear? Will you trust Him more deeply? Will you walk away from anger and worry? Will you seek help from a counselor if it's needed? Will you spend a day in solitude and prayer with God so you can slow down and hear about your fear? Many scary things are associated with this day. People get dared to go into a scary house or warned not to go to the place with the scary reputation or the scary story, the backstory. The truth is, friends, the scariest place we go is inside of ourselves. To honestly face up to our own fears. Without our defense mechanisms, without hiding, without pretending, without running away, without covering them up with worry or anger. The scariest place we go is inside ourselves. To look at our own fear, unvarnished, naked, terrifying. The good news is, we do not make the journey alone. God is with us. Our fear, my fear, your fear. It does not have to remain the unseen driving force of your life. We can embrace God. We can face fear with faith. We can live with the hope of a brand new day. I want to invite you, as our transformed praise team leads us in worship, I want to invite you to pray. I want to invite you to make some decisions about what you're going to do this week with your fear. I want to invite you to pray as you sing. I want to invite you to come pray at the altar. If you'd like, Pastor Walter and I will be in the back. You can come pray with one of us. For those of you online, if you'd like someone to pray with you or someone to talk with you, just direct message us. We'd love to connect. But this is your time, friends. This is the time where all of us can say, yes, I may be afraid, but by the grace of God, I will not let fear own me one day more. Let us pray. Let us sing. Would you stand?